freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
All right, here we go with the Brock and Salk podcast. Another one coming off a win. Strange podcast this week, though. It'll be me, Kyle, and Howdy.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to have you guys here today. Hi, Howdy. I know you got a lot to say.
Thanks for the invite, Mike.
It's always good to have you, Kyle. I thought you were out today, but it was nice to have you in. It was exciting when I saw you this morning. And necessary. I mean, obviously, Brock now has just kind of gone to a level where he doesn't need us anymore. He's moved past us.
He's flown the coop.
Is he now, what, the number two team on Fox? Like, I mean, Kugler and Brock, that's high-powered. I saw Kugler
People have been saying on Twitter, Hugler.
Hugler, yes.
Oh, it's the famous celebrity Hugler.
Yes, I see that. And, you know, he didn't tell us about it, even though the news came out like moments after we got
Scott
done.
Scott Hansen on Red Zone featuring that game almost exclusively throughout the afternoon.
Well, a
lot of Brock.
Was that because of Brock or because the Jets were going to pull
it? Well,
off?
I mean, they were putting that over the big Chiefs-Saints game.
Really?
So, yeah, I mean, I was watching it.
I had it on Hugler. DirecTV, so I was watching it.
Sunday ticket.
It was the only connection we even have to Brock anymore, as he's essentially
We read on Twitter last week that he was had a new NFL assignment.
That was
with
good.
Fox.
I liked reading that on Twitter. Yeah, that was definitely the way I wanted
to
find it.
Are you three knuckleheads done yet?
Who is this voice that speaks to me as if I want his opinion?
Brock!
Merry Christmas, kids. How we doing?
I'm glad you deigned to talk to us.
Yes. That news came out after we taped last week.
Like 10 minutes. It was like 10 minutes later.
We will occasionally get advance notice like, hey, Richard Deitch might be tweeting about my employment status.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I was doing national radio. What do you want me to say?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my goodness.
And then
me and Clayton
Kugler,
were doing national radio.
You know that we like Kugler, too. You know we've talked about him. He did a Seahawks game on a fill-in basis a couple years ago, and we were all excited about him. You know that we think he's a rising star. Do you even invite him on the show this week? No.
Ooh.
Is he a new partner in general? Was that a one-off? What's the deal?
He is a new partner for this week in the finale because Chris Spielman decided to take a job with the Lions. I mean, I see that as big-time positive. Aaron Boone becomes the manager of the Yankees. John Lynch becomes the GM of the 49ers.
Yeah, but this is not the Yankees
Chris
or the
Spielman
49ers.
Becomes,
this is
Chris,
the Lions.
Chris Spielman becomes chairman, you know, assistant to the chairman of the Detroit Lions.
So you're lining yourself up for an NFL exec job is what you're saying. You're on the front step of
you
an
best
NFL
believe
exec
it.
Job.
You best believe that.
Wow.
Yes.
I'd hire Brock to be a front office executive for my team.
Yeah.
Oh, thank
Wouldn't
you, Saul.
No?
I don't know. I mean,
other than his lack of communication here in the last week, other than that, don't you think you'd hire Brock?
Yeah, I think he'd be good for culture.
I think he'd be good for choosing players.
I'd have him in my draft room for sure.
Absolutely.
He'd be one of my draft
You'd have Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson and a lot of other guys over the years. You'd have Chase Winovich.
You'd have drafted Jamal Adams at some point.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think, I'd have Brock here.
Kevin Kugler's calling the Iowa-Purdue game. Otherwise, he would have joined us today because it is a tradition, unlike any other, that we invite our new co-host analyst onto the program.
Sometimes it goes better than other times.
He was busy today.
Sometimes you end up having fun with Chris Myers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And sometimes Gio Tessitore comes on and tries to intimidate everybody with his manliness. So you just never know what's going to happen.
And sometimes you ask one question to Bob and you got 30 minutes of radio.
All right. Well, it was, you did a great job. It was fun to watch. You guys did not seem like a new partnership. So that was fun to watch on Sunday. I loved the Seahawks game. I know that there are people hand-wringing left and right. I was honestly surprised by that when I heard about it. I thought that was a great win. And honestly, for the first three quarters, I know it kind of got a little tight late. I thought that was
little.
All right, it got tight late. but that's a Carlos Hyde drop and a Russell Wilson interception away from being a blowout, right? I mean, it's not close at all. If Carlos Hyde just catches a ball that hits him straight in the hands, Seahawks easily win that game. If Russ doesn't throw a weird, fluky interception, then the Seahawks easily win that game. So, I don't know. I was pretty impressed. I thought they played well. They handled this vaunted defense pretty darn well. The defensive line didn't do jack against them. And their defense, again, two bad drives, which is sort of, look, if you're not going to shut teams out in the NFL, it just doesn't happen. They gave up two drives. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure what else you really expect from this Seahawks team. I thought they played one of, if not their most complete football games of the year, other than the Jets game, which I'm still sort of throwing out, even though Brock helped them beat the Rams. Like, that was a good win.
It felt like, well, first of all, it felt like previous Seahawk wins through the year, so it doesn't surprise me you like that one. You like a balanced football team. But it also felt like, to a degree, that the crew, that the coaching staff put the players in the best position for their success mm-hmm. in this matchup.
Yes. Yeah, like they actually spent the week game planning for Washington.
Yes. Yeah, and instead of a Giants game plan that everybody just tore apart and just were hand-wringing for days on end, what are you doing? Why are you trying to take shots? What you're not playing to the strengths of your team. You're playing into their hands. We got to run it this week. And they ran it to a tune of 190 yards against a team that, I mean, that was the most that Washington crew had given up. I think that's a top 10 rush defense, about 113 a game, but even much better over the last 4 or 5 weeks. And you ran, and Russell ran, and Hyde ran, and Carson ran, and you moved the pocket, and you play action passed, and you minimize their great strength, and you put your backup right tackle in a position for success. Your guards that, you know, one a rookie that you know, has played a lot of football and more football than he ever has in his life, and you got to protect him, I think, at times in that matchup. Your left guard that's been rotating, poor Upati, once again goes down, this time with another stinger, and you got to protect that crew. You got to protect the game and minimize possessions and get it done, and they did. And up 20-3, it was, yes, up 20-3, what, late in the third quarter? It was as impressive first 45 minutes as they've had this season.
I liked it a lot. Like, I could watch Chris Carson knock people over and carry them for 9-10 yards. Like, that's fun for me. I know that there's people that get mad about it. I know the Smart 12s are mad every time he touches the ball, but...
You know exactly, though, why Seahawk fans did not like it.
Oh, did Pete punt on fourth down late in the game with a big lead? Uh-oh.
No.
Come on.
Pete, don't punt late in the game with a lead. You go for it every time. What are they mad? Oh, they're mad about that?
Seahawks fans are mad that the Seahawks are showing true colors when they could have been showing progress.
What were they supposed to? What specifically are they mad about?
They're mad that they didn't play four straight quarters of Seahawks football, and they ended up playing a quarter to just play down to their competition again and try to bury themselves the end of the game.
Do they watch the NFL?
No.
Serious question, no. Do they watch the NFL? No. Do they only watch Red Zone, or do they watch games in the NFL?
Oh, they only watch Seahawks games.
Okay, well, then that's part... I mean, I don't believe that. I don't believe they only watch Seahawks games.
I do. I believe
that they at least watch Red Zone.
A contingency that shares that opinion absolutely invests 90% of their NFL time into the Seahawks and 10% into their fantasy team or flipping channels.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, then, okay.
6-4-3,
I'm done with those people. I don't care what they think.
You're talking about 80% of Seahawks?
Yeah, I don't care what they think. If that's honestly the only thing they watch, they have no context. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch.
Well, how about the context of watching the Seahawks for the past few years and watching them not get over
the
hump and play games like this?
Any other NFL game. I mean, you don't watch the Monday night game. You don't watch the Thursday night game. You don't watch the Sunday night game. You don't need to watch, like, the 10 o'clock window in its entirety. You don't I mean, Brock mentioned it on his broadcast. We've had a game on every day of the week this year, save for Friday, and that's coming up this weekend.
Did you like that line? I said every day
Dude,
that ends
I thought you were fantastic. I believe me, I watched a lot of... I'm building a whole segment here off of one of your comments in a few minutes.
Yes.
I thought you were great. I enjoyed the broadcast quite a bit, honestly. There are a lot of, you know, okay broadcasters out there. I thought you did a great job. But you're telling me that they don't watch any of those other unique games? Games where there's no competition? I don't believe you.
They don't put anywhere near their time, thought, energy
but
into
they
those
watch
games.
Them.
Kind of.
Do they watch them like catatonic?
Yeah, they watch them passively, and then they watch the Seahawks hyper-aggressively.
I don't believe you. Because
I know I'm right on this.
No, okay? You're wrong. You're wrong.
Open up
the phone lines. I'm going to tell you why you're wrong.
Open up the phone lines and ask the people right now.
Here's why I know
you're wrong. You know what a 4-6-3 double play is. Go ahead. Open them up. Open up the phone lines.
Here's why I know you're wrong. Because a lot of those games that are on in a window where there's no other games on feature games or feature teams that specifically impact the Seahawks. So you're right. They're not watching Pittsburgh and Cincinnati with the same rapt attention as they are Seahawks games. Fine. I get that. Nor should they be. But when the Rams and Packers and Cardinals and Niners and other teams that over the course of a year will specifically affect how your team does, the Saints, I believe they are watching those games with a lot more attention. And if they do, they'll see that no team plays four quarters of great football. Nobody blows other teams out every week. That everyone does what the Seahawks do, which is to let teams back in. And we'll discuss that here a little bit more. I thought the Seahawks played a good game. I thought they coached a good game. I thought Russell had a good game. Quite frankly, the only problem they had is they threw the ball too often late, which is why they ended up with a pick and nearly let Washington back into the game. They could have run the ball more than they did, honestly. Mm-hmm. Chris Carson was that effective in the game, they could have given him more touches than they even did.
And Rashad Penny looked good. Man, he looked good coming back.
It was nice to see Rashad Penny.
Obviously. It was nice. I thought it was Rashad Penny, actually, on the touchdown run. It was up in the on the, the SoFi Stadium.
Getting into the end zone?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't him.
Brock, how naive.
It wasn't. That wasn't him. That would have been a hell of a story.
Similar body type, though. Similar big, thick, strong, fast.
They do look sort of similar out there. They both have the 0, 2-0, 3-0. Yep. Poor J.D. McKissick. Did they not have like 20, 21, 22, 24?
41?
That's just an insult.
Come on. He's not a special teamer.
I know Dan Snyder's a bad owner, but to not even have those numbers available for a little scat back is just straight up mean. Or unless J.D. McKissick's trying to prove he's tough, like, oh, no, I can run through the tackles. I wear 41.
Lower the shoulder.
Right. You think he's trying to convince the coach to let him run between the tackles?
Oh, I'm not a scat back. I'm not a receiver.
Yeah. No, I wear 41. Yeah, I wear 41.
So basically
a fullback. Put a neck roll on, bro. Put a neck roll on. You totally finish the deal.
Put that old Sam Gash thing on his.
Yes. I'll say this as well, though, to Howdy's point, Mike, and we can argue about just the intensity with which people watch the Seahawks versus other games and maybe where there's perception, reality, and delusion and everything else. I do think there are fans that watched that game and went, oh boy, here we go. We're getting near the playoffs. We're getting in December. This is what happens. This is what happened against Dallas. This is what happened against Green Bay. This is what's happened in the playoffs over the last few years where you've got to be more dynamic on offense. And I thought we were. Thought we turned that corner. Thought we could throw it at will. Thought you know, we could match anybody in the league offensively. And now we're turning the dial down.
You've got 121 yards passing. 121 yards passing against a secondary.
And now we're going to shorten the game, and we're going to minimize the game, and it's all going to come down to a few plays. We're going to have to probably go on the road if we don't beat the Rams. Going to have to go on the road multiple times. And I've just seen this movie.
I know,
I've seen this script.
It's too bad they don't have one
of
those awesome offenses like the Rams. It's too bad. The Rams look great this weekend. It's too bad they don't have one of those high-powered passing offenses like the vaunted Rams. That's too bad. Jeesh.
Sure would be nice.
That's a killer. Or like the Niners. I know there's a lot of jealousy about the Niners. Boy, it's too bad because they look good. That's a good team right
there.
Could
be like the Saints.
Huh?
Well.
It'd be nice to look like the Chiefs.
It would be. The Chiefs are unique. Okay. The Chiefs are special. True.
By the way, Adam Gase. Adam Gase on our Zoom meetings was unlike any coach that I've ever talked to.
Did he get those eyes going?
Kind of, but he wore his hat backwards and low, like a low rider hat backwards.
What do you mean, low on his forehead?
Yes.
That's low with like the bill over the eyes.
So was it
backwards?
Was it
hat backwards, low, like scrunching kind of the face down.
Like tag hanging out between the eyebrows.
Was the back of the hat like popped up, or was it actually covering his whole head?
That's a good question.
Remember that look? People sort of pop the back up and turn. It was almost like a Fred Durst look.
He was terrific. He was honest. He was funny. He was smart. And at one point, he was just like, you know what? Honestly, Patrick Mahomes kind of screws us all. He does. Like, Sam Darnold and all the young quarterbacks and everybody watches Mahomes. He's like, he's the greatest player I've ever watched from the sidelines. And, you know, I had Peyton, won a Super Bowl with him. He's like, I've never seen anybody play quarterback ever, ever, ever like Patrick Mahomes. Mm. And he makes it look so easy and so effortless. And just do that. Just do that. But nobody can. Nobody else can.
Well, and Andy Reid is the perfect coach for. I mean, like, there's a bunch of things that all come together. That's not who Pete Carroll is. So if you're expecting the Seahawks to be the Chiefs, it's not going to happen.
Well, hold on, but they were. They were for 4 weeks.
They threw the ball a lot for a few weeks.
And incredibly successful. And then what happened? Whatever they
and
wanted.
Then what happened?
The running backs got hurt, and then Russell Wilson lost all of his confidence.
Well, Russ threw like 9 picks.
Right.
So, yeah, he lost his confidence. And Pete lost his confidence in the ridiculous plan that eventually came crashing back to earth the way it was always going to. Because you can't throw the ball that often unless you have an Andy Reid. And they don't. That's not who they are.
Or
Pete Carroll wants to have a balanced team. And when you're asking somebody to play outside of their identity and do something that they're not, that they don't truly embrace and truly want to do. And if you don't have Patrick Mahomes, then eventually this is going to happen. And it did. That's Russell's best attribute. I will shout this from every rooftop.
To the day you die.
Is his efficiency. His creativity is great. All the other parts about Russ, his accuracy, they're tremendous. But Russell's best feature, the thing that sets him apart from everybody else, is his efficiency. And they were not asking him to do that. They were asking him to become a volume passer, which he's fine at. He's good at that. That's not to say Russell's a bad volume passer. The Seahawks don't go into a tank because Russell's volume passing. But his best feature, the thing that sets him apart, is his efficiency. And they went away from that.
The thing 10 years ago that you and I were hoping for, that just wishing they would draft this guy, was because at Wisconsin, he set a new all-time record in college football for efficiency. He's the most efficient quarterback in the history of college football at that time, arriving in Madison, Wisconsin in August, becoming their captain, was unbelievably efficient. And for 9 years in the NFL, he is only behind Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes now, who's qualified all-time in efficiency. That's what he is. He is an efficient guy. You want me to throw it 27 times and not put the ball in harm's way? Yes, it was a fluky and amazing interception by their guys, but by and large, you want me to do that, manage a game? And yeah, it's just, it is the game manager. And Joel Klatt, my buddy, just hates that term. He just abhors it because game manager is what you are supposed to do, to manage a game to win. It's what managers in baseball do.
But there are so many quarterbacks around the league that are bad at that.
Do we call every manager in baseball bad? Is a game manager? You're a manager in baseball. Is that somehow a connotation of being negative or bad or you can't do the job? Well, no. Your job is to manage and manage to a championship, and the best managers are esteemed. And Joe Montana was a game manager, and Troy Aikman was a game manager, and Tom Brady's been a game manager. I got to manage. Peyton Manning was a game manager, especially near the end of his career where he won his titles. I manage the game to win. You need me to throw for 250 yards in a half in a playoff game? I can do it. I can do it. That's what I need to do. But if you wanted me to manage it through less than 30 passes a game through 9 years, I've proven to be one of the best in the history of the NFL doing.
Yeah, and you know, he does throw the ball, what, 127 times or 121 yards in the game. His QBR, that's different from rating, but okay, his QBR for the game is 92.7. And then you see
hundreds max, because that's like a decision.
Right, exactly. And then you look at Dwayne Haskins, who, look, I'm not saying he's a great quarterback, quite the opposite, but throws the ball 55 times and has a QBR 57.5. Why do the Seahawks win? Efficiency there, and also because they ran the ball for 181 yards in the game, and honestly, ran the ball 26 times. Six of those were Russell Wilson runs, so they called 20 running plays. If they had called 35 running plays, they might have won by more. I mean, I honestly believe they could have just continued to maul that Washington team, and they're having a lot of success doing it.
3 weeks ago, had they run that plan, the Seahawks would be 11-3, and we'd be talking about the number one seed in the playoffs coming through Sunday. This is the matchup with the Rams on Sunday. Had they employed that game plan to run, move the pocket, take what's there, get the ball out of your hands, we'll take the lead, we'll get up on Colt McCoy in the building, if 20-3 game is over, they would be 11-3 had they employed that same exact game plan against the Giants at home 2 weeks ago. They would.
And by the way, they'd also be 11-3 if Russ had just won that game at the end like he was supposed to. I mean, he had the ball, timeouts, everything else. All he could do is go down the field and do it. But, okay, whatever. The Seahawks had a good game, and I was impressed by it anyway. I thought that they were physical. I thought they shut down their opponent's best and only weapon, which is that defensive line. Did you hear Chase Young's name mentioned the whole game? He was a non-factor. A complete non-factor in the game, and other than, yeah, you're right, the crazy pick, because he made a nice play on it, Montez Sweat was a non-factor. their defensive line did bupkis.
Zero sacks on the game.
Yeah. I mean, and really not close to being sacked. So I thought that they took away their best weapon. They had came up with a couple of picks. The defense played flawlessly for the first half, and other than a couple of drives, had a really good game. So I like this game, but okay, fine. I understand. The other team came back and made it close late. So, Brock, I heard you, as you were doing the Rams and Jets game, say something along the lines of, this happens, you know, we're watching the greatest comeback potentially in Rams history, right?
Yes.
It was an opportunity for them to come back from like 27 points down or whatever it was. And you said, well, this is what we see seemingly every single week in the NFL. For fans that watch games everywhere, there are crazy fourth quarter comebacks from three scores down seemingly every single week. So let's take a couple minutes to try to figure out why. It's not a Seahawks problem specifically. The NFL is starting to look like the NBA, where teams are constantly coming back. So how often does it happen?
So here's the notes leading into last week's game. So we get these notes every week from our team at Fox. They come from Sport Radar is the crew that puts these together. And then we get them sent to us every week late in the week. So week 14, so we're coming up on week 16. So this was before last week's set of games, before that near Rams comeback. Week 14 saw only one team, the Chiefs, rally from a deficit of 10-plus points to go on and win. That was their win down in Miami. That ended 2020's run of weeks with multiple 10-plus rallies at 13.
Wow.
The longest such stretch to open a season in NFL history.
Now, how many of those was it all from the Seahawks?
No.
Okay, good.
Despite the lone big rally last week, okay, just the one double digit, 2020 still boasts the most comeback wins from deficits of 10-plus points through the first 14 weeks of a season at 39 different times.
Wow.
In 14 weeks, 39 different times. The Chiefs rally also snapped a tie for the most comebacks, 10-plus points for a full season, moving the 2020 season into sole possession of fifth place all time. Next up was 2002, which saw 40. They are on pace to shatter the all-time NFL record of most double-digit comebacks in a season.
Okay, so it happens a lot. And I want to be clear, not only that list you just gave doesn't include all the games that get close but are still won by the team that had the lead.
Correct.
Right? That's only teams that came all the way back to win.
This Sunday, Seahawks,
right.
Washington, 17.4.
So that one doesn't even
almost
count.
Almost eliminated.
That one doesn't even
this
count.
This last Sunday, the Jets and the Rams had held on to beat the Rams.
Right. The Rams came all the way back, but not quite. Right? They got it to a one-score game, but not all the way back to it. So that only includes the actual comebacks for victories. If you were to include...
Oh.
I mean, I bet you you'd be looking at six games a week.
Deficits that shrink to one score from two.
Yes.
From three.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One score.
Deficits that shrink from three score games to one score games by the end. I bet you are looking at five games, six games a week. Maybe not quite that many. Maybe four or five.
Not quite that many.
It's certainly more than two.
It's not just the NFL. Yes. We've seen it in college with the Huskies twice, with the Cougs giving up a 45 unanswered or whatever it was in the second half last weekend.
Now, in the NBA, we know why it happens, because nobody plays until there's five minutes left in the game. They're just there hanging out, and then finally, it's game time.
There we go.
So why does this happen in football? I've got some theories. I don't know the answer to it, but I'll throw out a couple of theories as to why this is now happening constantly in football, and I have maybe four from least likely to most likely. Okay,
you got four?
Yeah. Okay. I've got four potential reasons why this happens. Maybe you have more. I got four. The least likely is officiating, that the leagues just want close games and they try to make it happen, that when a team gets up by three scores, the officials do everything in their power to help the team that is down come back. And that's why it occurs, because the NFL wants to have these fantastic finishes, nonstop, one-score games, gambling, you know, disasters, etc.
The NBA.
Yeah, they're essentially fixing it like
the
NBA does.
Belief Monday night at Philadelphia with the intentional grounding that didn't make the line of scrimmage, a couple given first downs. Like, what's going on here?
Now, this is my least likely. I don't think this is the case. But you got to at least throw it out there as a possibility that one explanation is this is what the NFL wants, and they officiate their way to get it.
I would say that's least likely.
Okay.
I would say, unlike even the NBA, when there were fixed games, when we know that, when someone went to jail for it, the avenues and the opportunities, if you wanted to do that, the channels of communication are more wide open today than ever before. They are in constant communication with New York. Al Riveron, the head of officiating, mm-hmm. and others there have the ability to get on those mics and speak. The referees all talk to each other, right? They're all connected via headsets, so they don't have to gather together. They don't have to create a scene. They can just simply hit a button and say, well, like the channels for that today. And again, I'm with you. I don't think it happens.
But it's
possible. But the channels of availability yeah. are incredible today.
All right, so that's one option, is that games get closer because the NFL deems it to be necessary and the officials go and make it happen. Next least likely is pressure, that these young millennials just can't handle the pressure of being ahead, and it gets to them. That they're up, and that makes them nervous, and that, you know, like a golfer, and they just come crashing back to earth. I don't believe this one either. In fact, I might even put this one below officiating.
I think I put that one below officiating.
Yeah, they're tied. Neither one is true. But you got to throw them out there as possibilities because these are the types of things that it could be. I don't think the pressure gets to guys or coaches.
I mean, you saw Kyle, right, at 18 on the golf course down in Arizona years ago. Where
is that
he
the one
that
where
shot,
he fell?
Hit the shot out of the creek.
Fell into the creek.
Yeah.
Yep. It was wet, muddy, bloody, the
but
whole
delivered.
Thing.
But he delivered when it mattered. He made the putt. He tied it. Yeah, I mean, so
almost the exact same shot that Tiger's kid hit the other day. The same little draw.
It was a draw with the.
He hit it with a 5-wood.
Yeah, so that was kind of hitting like a fairway.
Yeah,
that was
grid.
Surreally spooky. How yeah, it was. Unbelievable that.
We'll talk
was.
About him in a few minutes. I promise. Okay. So we're not really buying pressure as a
not
reason.
Really.
It's not
nope.
the pressure. Okay.
Nope.
Reason number three, and now I think we're getting closer, is. Talent, there's not much difference in talent between these teams, especially in the NFL. For the most part, these teams have all excellent players, and it's like little things that make the difference. And so while over 30 or 45 minutes, a team might be ahead by three scores, over 60 minutes, eventually that's going to come back closer. And that if they played 120 minutes, it would be even more so, or 180 minutes. Like the longer these teams play against each other, the closer the score will tend to be, because other than a few key plays made by a few key difference makers, the talent differential is just not very large.
I would agree with that, and I would add to that and say, especially this year, in the offseason, everything else, and really the last, not even this year. I mean, heck, look at the Super Bowl when the Seahawks lost Cliff Averill and Lane. Like, you just, that game totally changed, and you see so many teams that have lost so many starters and people. So that talent has even, I think, gotten closer with backups to backups and in lots of different places. And yes, I think that I put a ton of stock in that.
It's why that you give the Any Given Sunday mantra, right? Like, that's why Any Given Sunday exists. That's why on any week one team can beat another, why the Jets could beat the Rams. Like, that can happen because they're really, as much as we see, okay, one team is 11-0 and the other is 0-11, they're actually not that different talent.
No, this is not Bama and Clemson and Ohio State with 5 stars and 4 stars and Alabama signing 17 top 300 players and their peers at Vanderbilt having 0.
What a surprise, by the way, with Bama and Clemson and Ohio State being the top three.
Mm. Pretty remarkable.
I haven't watched 1 second of college football this year, and I could have guessed that that would be the case.
Yes.
Not 1 second.
So unlike college,
I guess I've watched a few seconds. I watched the Huskies in Arizona and couldn't decide which team was which. But amazing. Amazing that occurred.
Yes. Unlike the NBA, that you can have 3 superstars. And
LeBron James was in the finals in the NBA this year. Do you know that?
Yes.
I watched every game leading up to it, and then at the end, there was LeBron James.
And weird, there's a Dodgers rotation that's 5 deep.
Right, true.
Right? I mean,
The Dodgers, yeah, they spent the most money. Go figure.
I think you kind of see it in different sports. When the beauty of this NFL, man, is, yeah, when it takes 53 guys and 15 on a practice squad and some guys get injured and it's all about your health, largely at the end, and who can stay healthy and keep your stars healthy? Nobody. Okay, well, what can we do with our backups? And how? I mean, it's just, yeah, I think the talent is in heck, the game that I saw.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rams have Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers and Leonard Floyd and Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. And
Jets have some, Braxton Berrios or something. I mean, like, it's about the same.
But the Jets have, when they have Denzel Mims and when they have Jamison Crowder, and you know, when they have Mekhi Becton and when they have Marcus May and they've got some of their best players playing, it levels the playing field.
Yep.
Levels playing field.
All right, so that's reason number two, and there's probably some validity there. And by the way, it could be a little of this one and the next one, and I don't know, maybe the officials, maybe the pressure, I don't know. I don't buy too much of that. The last one, and this is, I think, sort of just part of the game of football, and it's why you see some of this in college as well, is just when you get up big, you are left with a difficult decision. Risk versus reward, right? Do you run the ball and play it safe? Don't risk a turnover. Don't risk stopping the clock. But it's a lot easier to stop because teams are going to load up for it. Or do you throw the ball, which is risky for two reasons. One, you could throw a pick like Russ did this week to help let the other team back in. Or two, you stop the clock every time you have an incomplete pass and give the team, you know, so you have, you sort of not only don't advance the ball, but you also don't take time off the clock. But there's a huge payoff because if you're able to complete those passes when the other team is doubled up against the run, then you can do what the Chiefs did the other day, which is to, you know, complete a successful pass and move down the field pretty easily, kill the clock, and win. So that risk reward gives you two ways to succeed, but it also gives you two ways to fail. And every time you run the ball and the other team stops it, everybody can crow and say, "You should have thrown it there, blah, 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 blah. Conservative." Blah. And every time you throw the ball, you, other people can say, "What are you doing? You stopped the clock and it was incomplete, or you threw a pick." And it's just, if it doesn't work in either direction, the other team's going to come back. That's how the game is sort of set up at the end of games.
And you are looking at just one side of that, because that same exact risk-reward equation is played out defensively when I've got a lead. Do I want to call off the blitzes? Do I want to stop bringing Jamal Adams? Do I want to just keep everything in front of me? Do I want to just kind of tackle and rally and give up 7 yards? Or do I want to continue to be aggressive and bring pressure, but I leave man-to-man, and man, I leave myself vulnerable to a 60-yard touchdown pass, right? So that risk-reward is certainly, you know, going through the cranium of an offensive coordinator. It equally is going through the mind of a defensive coordinator. You know what's fascinating, too, by the way? That whole Greg Williams bring seven people, cover zero, lose the game on that play. If you go back and watch that game, do you know what he called on the play right before that?
Same play?
Nope. He called the most conservative zone defense. And you know what happened? The receiver for Aguilar for the Raiders went right by everyone in zone. And Derek Carr hit him. Like, it was too deep zone with a runner down the middle. Like, you can't give that up. And Aguilar is 3 yards behind every Jets guy. And he caught it there. There would have been nobody. Like, oh, my gosh, these players are horrendous. I mean, Greg Williams, who likes to blitz, what did he do? He went zone. He dropped eight. And they still got behind him for the touchdown. So you knew what was coming next. He's like, screw that. I'm not doing that. My guys get beat doing that. I'm bringing the house. So I don't give them time to throw it deep down the field. So, yes, Mike, that mindset is offensive, which is where I think most of us fall, and it's so much easier to see.
No, I think
because
we
can differentiate run and pass.
We hear about prevent. What does the prevent do? It prevents you from winning.
But it's equally on that defense. Like, are we going to bring extra people? Are we going to bring five? Are we going to bring six?
Right.
Are we going to just play zone? And, man, when the Seahawks just play soft zone coverage, look what happens.
Yep.
They go up and down the field. Up and down the field. Anybody.
But when you do the opposite, you can allow the big play, which lets
Correct.
The other team back in even faster. So I think the part of the problem is that the NFL game is set up for teams to come back.
Yep.
It forces you into a bind. This goes back to the David and Goliath thing of the advantages of being disadvantaged and vice versa. The NFL game is designed with the way incompletion stop the clock, with interceptions, with risk reward. It is designed for things to get close at the end. And
yep.
So I guess I just find smart people who work in this business are going to spend unbelievable amounts of time trying to figure out the best way to fix this problem, because it's a big one. And some of the thinking out there, and I know I make fun of the smart 12s, but some of the thinking, and there's a lot of validity to it, is about how to throw the ball through it and look at the yards, you know, the expected win percentage change for every play, et cetera. And I think that's one aspect of it. That's one way to approach this problem. Another way is to say, okay, how do I change the risk reward scenario at the ends of games? And you could make an argument that the best way to, like, the most conservative way to win these games, the safest way to win these games is to just run the ball and have success, even though the other team knows you're going to do it. So what if you built your team that way? What if you knew that all of these games were going to come down to the end, and so you wanted to have a team that could just run the ball and be nasty and win and run it, even though you were under pressure to do so? Now, here's why it doesn't work. Because how do you get to the big lead to begin with? Well, it seems to me that one of the best ways to do it in the NFL now is by throwing the ball successfully. And if you do get yourself stuck where you're now down a few scores, then you can't be the team to come back because you don't have all the horses to do it. You haven't set your team up that way. Except that that's the way the Seahawks used to be built. I mean, when you look at the Seahawks in the height of their success, they were built to do exactly what I just said. When they got up, they would just take your life away. Their defense was ridiculous, and their offense was designed to, even though you were stacking the box, they had a big power running back and a big, nasty offensive line, and they would just physically move you out of the way in order to kill the clock and kill the game. But they also had Russell Wilson, who, even though his best talent is his efficiency, is capable of throwing the ball down the field enough to help you get back into games if you were down a couple of scores. It's why the Seahawks were so good for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But that's hard to build. Right?
It's hard to sustain.
So what's the thing that they missed the most out of that other than the defense? On offense, it's getting out to that lead. Like when they were in 2013, 2014, they did a better job of getting out to that lead. And then for like 5 or 6 years, they could not get a lead to save their life.
Right, because it seemed like teams sort of started playing the beginning of the game like it was the end of the game.
Well,
let's stack the box, let's go.
Their offensive line got so bad, and they didn't have the running back situation that they needed to have. So then what happened at the beginning of this year? They designed an offense that got them the leads.
Did they, or did they finally get a good offensive line? I would argue that the biggest difference this year is that the offensive line is finally good. I don't think it had that much to do with the, you know, all the... I don't know, maybe some of it was the game planning. Sure, okay. I'm not going to say it wasn't. But how much better is this offensive line than what we've seen for the last 7 years? Much better. Like, much, much better.
And then how much of it, boys, is the in-game adjustments that you just talked about, Mike, that all of these teams spend that have, like, coaching staffs 20 deep and personnel crews behind it? Because I would contend with those Seahawks teams, you also started to see opponents play it totally differently. We're not going to take a risk. Why would I throw picks? Why am I going to ask my guys to play into the strengths of the Legion of Boom? Forget that. Check down, check down, check down, check down, check down, check down. I'm not going to give them any turnovers. We're going to shorten the game. We'll minimize the game. We'll keep it closer against them. And, oh, they're going to run the ball. And all of a sudden, we're going to have 9 possession games. And, man, still a lot of those games with the Seahawks in 13 and 14, they were close. There were a lot of close games, a lot of them. But, you know, the Seahawks had, as you just said, the ability in the end with Marshawn, a physical crew, play action off of it to win and then to rush the passer and to close it down. You know, as you were talking, I wrote down two teams that have really built themselves, Mike, in that way to go and finish. And it's a team I'm going to see for the first time in person. And that's the Baltimore Ravens this weekend. DJ Fluker's playing tackle for the Ravens. He couldn't play guard and move here. He's playing tackle because they just asked him to absolutely maul people on the edge. Orlando Brown is like 6'8", 365, blocks out the sun on the other side. They've got a 300-pound fullback. Do you know that? They've got a 300-pound fullback.
It's like a fullback D-tackle hybrid?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a Tukuafu sort of deal.
Yeah, and they just pound you. And you know what? They're going to spend draft capital, and we're going to take J.K. Dobbins. Why would you take J.K. Dobbins when you've got Mark Ingram? Because we run the ball, and we need three backs. And Gus Edwards and, oh, Lamar Jackson. We actually have four backs. And we're just going to pound you and pound you and pound you and then be able to finish you. The Tennessee Titans would be the other one.
Brock's getting too much perspective now. What's going on here, Brock? You go to these NFL games, and now you know so much about the league and the Seahawks and telling us that Pete Carroll's not alone. Sean McVay's got bad losses.
It's kind of good. I like it.
Oh,
it's a lot more helpful than when he would come back and be like, guess what happened to Tennessee? All right. They played Rocky Top.
Starkville,
cool.
Fayetteville.
Right. Gosh, why weren't you doing this 5 years ago?
He's making us uncomfortable outside of our bubble. Why, Brock?
It's kind of fun. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of fun doing the NFL. And oh, by the way, have I told you guys the NFL is a lot easier to do? Instead of 4 hour and 10, do you know how long the Mountain West Championship was, Kyle? I know you were watching Tim Brando and Petros Papadakis. That was 4 hours and 10 minutes.
I know that on Saturday, as the Cougs were melting down, they were 3 hours into the game. It was the third quarter.
Dude, that's 4 hours and 10 minutes, and that's just halftime.
We finished a game the week before the Chargers game. Chargers Falcons was 2 hours and 50 minutes. Like, what are we doing? Well,
that's because I think they didn't sell any commercials for that game, so they just kind of played running time for that one. It's like no one's watching, so they just have to go. All right. So look, I think we've got a lot of potential ways, to deal with this. I don't know what the real answer is, but just before you start throwing your tearing your hair out and saying the Seahawks stink and they can't win the Super Bowl and they
can't
let
keep
teams
a lead.
Back. Yeah, that's the NFL. That's life in the big city, man. I don't know what.
Can I give you one last little nugget too? Speaking of outside my Seahawk bubble too, who was renowned to be the worst game manager? Who did everybody say?
Andy
oh
Reed.
Gosh, lots of talent, wins lots of games, blows it late, blows it in game,
Peyton
blows
Manning?
It in the play. Andy Reid.
Oh, I thought
Andy
Reid.
Andy Reid. It's always Andy Reid.
I always said that about Peyton Manning. I said that about Peyton Manning.
Oh gosh, the Eagles down at the end of the game. Andy Reid will blow this.
The drive to nowhere.
Yeah.
Andy Reid. And now what is Andy Reid? Andy Reid now the pillar of how you have to build a team and how you play these games?
Because he said, you know what? Let's not let this thing get close to the end anymore. Like, forget it. Let's get so far ahead we can't lose games.
So is it working?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
It's working.
Is that a sustainable model for everybody?
Not everybody. Not everybody. No.
Is that a sustainable model for the Seahawks?
Would Adam Gase just tell you?
No, answer the question. Is that a sustainable model for these Seahawks?
I believe so, but I don't think it's an overnight thing.
I totally disagree with you. I don't think it is at all. They're a talented team. They've got Russell Wilson, but I don't think it is. And that's not a shot at Russ or the team or anything. I just don't think that's sustainable for them. And it's not who Pete Carroll is. At his core, he doesn't want to do that. So I, give it up. It's not going to happen that way. And there are plenty of other ways for this team to win and do what they need to do. It's not going to be by blowing teams out by 30 points every week. Just not going to happen.
Well, and I would say this, too, about those Chiefs and Tyreek Hill and Kelsey and all the rest of the crew. And, oh, by the way, Pro Bowl offensive linemen, they kind of feel to me like the Seahawks defense of 12, 13, 14, 15. Where people said, you can't do that. It's not going to be sustainable. How can you play coverage like that? The Legion of Boom, how are you going to keep them all together? And you can have an incredible, incredible run. And Patrick's got amazing, amazing talent around him. Eventually, you're going to have to replace those guys. Eventually, they're going to get old. Eventually, going to lose a step. Eventually, the contracts are just going to get too much for you to handle. And then, let's see just how sustainable that model is. Over these 4 years, absolutely off the charts incredible. Can they do it for a decade? Can he win like Russell has won for a decade plus? Very much to be determined.
Well, Brock, we're nearly here at Christmas, December nearly over, and Famous Dave's has gone above and beyond here for the month of December. We talked a little bit about this last week, but let's get back into it, because they're doing the buy one, give one in regards to turkeys all through this month. All donations going to Northwest Harvest. Plus, you can get 20% off all orders through Famous Dave's website with the code DaveCares. Again, DaveCares at FamousDaves.com. Buy one, give one. This is like right after your own heart, Brock. This is right up your alley,
so
right?
So good.
Buy one.
I'm surprised they still have turkeys left to give.
Well, remember, nobody ate them on Thanksgiving, right? It was like sort of the anti-turkey Thanksgiving. People didn't have the big turkeys, etc. So there's
start of a movement.
Kind of a surplus of turkeys out there. And so you do buy one, give one to make sure that the people who need the turkeys get the turkeys, right?
That's awesome.
I really
like it. And it's Dave Cares, you said?
Dave Cares. That's the code at FamousDaves.com. Now, they do still have all your barbecue favorites. We got the St. Louis style spare ribs, my favorite. You got the country roast chicken, Texas beef brisket. You got Georgia chopped pork. You got burgers, wings, sandwiches, home style desserts. We've talked about them. I mean, you got everything that Famous Dave's has to offer, plus buy one, give one with turkeys and all donations going to Northwest Harvest. So again, FamousDaves.com all through Christmas here. Donations to Northwest Harvest plus 20% off all orders with the code DaveCares at FamousDaves.com. All right, Brock, a little potpourri here before we dig into some Blue 88 to end this thing here and get some of your football wisdom as you've acquired it now with all of your partners in the NFL and everything else this year. But to jump away from football for just a minute, and then I got some football-related potpourri questions. Did you get to see any of the PNC and see Tiger playing with his son, Charlie? Did you get to see
I just saw so many of those videos and highlights in the kind of social media realm. Unbelievable.
Right.
The PGA Tour just put one out, I think, yesterday of the mannerisms of just comparing the two. It was like a split screen side by side. Not only their swing, how they stand, how they walk, how they pick up the tee, how they putt, how he fist pumps. I mean, it was mini me to a tee, no pun intended.
Yeah, no kidding, right? And obviously the kid's got, you know, pretty good genes. Did you say that Elin was there too? Did you see that? Mm-hmm. She was there watching from the side and with their daughter.
Have you seen her swing?
No, I think it's pretty good, right?
Probably.
Yeah, I'm just guessing.
You have no idea.
Why wouldn't it be?
Sure.
I mean.
Oh, you haven't? No, I mean.
I saw her swing that 5-iron at Tiger on Thanksgiving night, and it looked like it was pretty good.
Elin was walking around with a applesauce pouch in her pocket. You know, like, it's kind of funny to see, like, someone being a soccer mom at a PGA Tour event. So, there's a weird contrast there.
But the kid can play. I mean, he's 11 years old. His swing is ridiculous. He's obviously got a great teacher and a great genes and everything else from Tiger. But did you happen to catch any of Tiger's responses after? This is what I really enjoyed as I was and I, you know, I'm not a big Tiger fan. I don't think he's a perfect person, but I thought he handled his son's introduction to the world of golf incredibly well. And I was thinking about what advice that I got. So Avery's just started playing golf a little bit. She's almost 9. And when I talked to my guy, Jim Bennett, down at the Pro Golf and South Center, he said, look, 3 things. Number 1, make it fun. No matter what, just make it fun. Like, okay. Then number 2 was hands high in the backswing. And number 3 was turn to make her show you the bottom of her right foot after the swing. It's like, okay, I can do those 3 things. But he said, by far and away, the most important of those is just make it fun. Because if it's not fun, none of the rest of it matters. So don't get mad. Don't be intense about it.
This was advice for you or for Avery?
This was advice for me.
Oh.
For her.
Okay.
Right. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So listen to Tiger afterwards. He's asked about Charlie, and immediately that's what he turns it to.
Well, just making sure that you know, we had fun, and we did. And as I said, having the entire Thomas family out there and be able to share all these moments and the conversation we had all day, you know, amongst each other, priceless.
Did he do anything that surprised you?
Okay, so that's the first one.
No, I've.
Then he's asked another question, and he starts, like, because they want him to be a little more specific, and he starts to slip into talking about the shots and then realizes, nope, that's not the game plan here.
Hey, Tiger, is it fair to say that that Charlie carried you today?
He did. You know, he there's some of the most incredible golf shots and the best time. I mean, to be out there, you know, in this environment with JT and Mike and Danny and the entire Thomas family. And then we have, you know, big Joey and little Joey, you know, on the bag for him. So it couldn't have been a better environment.
Right. He starts to answer because clearly he's excited about the way his kids played golf and he wants to talk about the 5 wood that he hit for an eagle and everything else. But nope, that's not what we're talking about here. It's fun, and I thought that was a really interesting and telling conversation with Tiger.
And when you think Tiger Woods, you think fun.
Well, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
But you can understand how,
which I think speaks to it more, right?
Right.
I mean, it, because that was not his upbringing. I mean, his upbringing was the opposite of
yes.
that, and it was discipline and it was intensity, and it the only thing fun was when he putted on the Johnny Carson show when he was like 3. But even then, it wasn't like pick him up, celebrate. It's like, look at this genius, look at this wonder,
mm-hmm.
look at this marvel that is Tiger Woods. And yeah, I think he's trying to do it totally different than the wiring that was built into him.
Well, so I think a little bit, you know, as I was watching this, I thought about a lot of different things. But one of the things that I think about is you and your family and, you know, the Heward name and Sam, obviously, just this week signing to go to Washington officially. Kyle pointing out the Damon, no shoes.
He's outdoor signing ceremony.
No shoes.
Sucks. No shoes.
Well, let's just say I texted him. There's a few different text streams that include Damon. And I said, I'm curious the homeless look.
Oh, jeez.
What? I mean, what? Without the shoes on, like, just you know, he had a hat on, you know. But I just
people that go barefoot that aren't home that have homes.
No, I understand. But everybody
Seattle
else
in December,
everybody else had shoes.
Yeah, why
Julie
no
had
shoes?
Her nice shoes on.
Yeah.
And Brooke and Grandma and Grandpa
Grandma Peg,
on both
Grandpa
sides.
Mike
everybody
there.
Had shoes. Sam,
I
Damon
thought it
went
was
homeless.
Maybe more telling that the Heward side of the family, your parents, Brock, were just no Husky gear.
Oh, really?
Are they trying to make a statement? Like, maybe they're against the signing or something?
Yeah, Grandpa Mike, no purple, no gold.
I didn't, and obviously Julie's family did, but no, yeah. nothing for Mike and Peggy.
Who was it, Kyle? Who was that running back that like went to LSU and mom wanted to go to Florida?
It's Alex Collins.
There you go.
Yeah, his mom wanted to go to either LSU or Alabama, and he went to Arkansas. She was furious at him.
I think at first she refused to sign the letter of intent.
She wouldn't sign it.
She's like, I don't know. And she wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? You have offers from the two best programs in America, and you're trying to go play for Brett Bielema at Arkansas?
It was Alex Collins who wanted to do that.
And he said, Mom, I'm going to have 3 straight 1,000-yard years. Yeah. I'm going to get myself to the league, and I'm right.
What do you think about this at all, whether it's with
all
your
the time.
How do you kind of process that stuff?
Yeah. How do you create those environments where it can be fun? You know, golf is kind of unique because I think you can shape that because, A, it's an individual sport. Right. I mean, it's a caddy and everything else, but it's largely an individual sport. You can kind of pick and choose the events you want to go to. There's not I know that the youth golf gets incredibly competitive and intense and hostile too. But when you're Tiger Woods, you kind of have the resources to be able to grow and develop your kiddo and put him in maybe circumstances others can or situations he can't. So he could probably cultivate and navigate some of that fun a little bit easier than others do, Mike. But yeah, I mean, you've heard me express that over the decade or so. And me, yeah, I was just telling the story, by the way, to my new crew, about that time when Damon was actually in the AAU gym and I yelled "and one" when Haley went up in fifth grade and that girl on the other team pointed to me and fell into a puddle of tears and said, mm-hmm. That's a mean guy. He's being mean. And, so I've kind of had to deal with this for a whole long time. And can you imagine being Tiger Woods' son in the amount of pressure that's going to fall on him?
Are we going to move on from that? Brock, you're making fun of a fifth grader.
I wasn't making fun. I
yes,
said,
you
and
were. He's a mean guy.
Dude.
She was 10 years old.
I was celebrating my daughter and won.
Fine, but you don't
that
need to mock her.
That other girl did something wrong. And look at her. Look at that girl. She messed up.
Mean guy.
God. Jeez, man.
Everyone look at that girl.
You are harsh. I know you get the credit for being the nice guy, and I'm the big jerk, the big meanie, but you're much meaner than me at your core. Like, I'm nice at my core. I just come off a little rough.
Right.
You're mean. Right. You have, like, a mean heart.
Right. I got some peanut brittle, too, for you. Right.
Right. Anyway, well, I was thinking about you as I was watching, just as you know, as a professional athlete yourself who has kids that are that kind of talented. Some of the different ways there are to make sure that you don't Marv Marinovich this thing. But if anybody was likely to Marv Marinovich, it's Tiger because his dad is the successful version of Marv, right?
Yep. Yes. Yes. But I think he also has seen the pitfalls of that and not being just a balanced human and everything else that comes with that socially.
But I wouldn't have guessed that he'd have known all of that and known how to fix it. I wonder if he received help. I wonder if he received, if he talked to somebody and got that advice. And I'd be very curious to kind of know the rest of that story.
Yeah. And watch what other golfers and their sons like just influence.
Well, and seeing Justin Thomas and his dad is probably a good example. I know his dad wasn't a PGA player, right? He's just a teaching pro. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's a head club pro.
But I don't know. I mean, being around that, and it sounds like they are
jokes
friends.
Aside, Tiger did receive a lot of help professionally.
True.
And counsel.
Yeah.
And growth. So, yeah, maybe that was part of that process. Hey, man, you can't take this so seriously.
Yeah, find ways to let Charlie. Yeah, I don't know. It was pretty cool to watch.
So
do you
really think
it
was a difficult choice for him to pick Charlie or Jordan Spieth?
What?
Are you saying Tiger's Jordan's dad?
What are you talking
Who's
about?
Who's your daddy?
Are you just being mean? Are you trying to say that Charlie's better than Jordan Spieth? Was that a bad joke? Were you trying to say that Charlie is better than Jordan Spieth? We're moving on. Next question. Speaking of choosing one or the other, where one is clearly better, what do you do in Philly right now? You've got Jalen Hurts and you've got Carson Wentz. What do you do? You can't trade Carson Wentz. Nobody wants him. And it's
you can trade him.
I don't know. With the way that contract is structured and everything else.
If you
I don't
want
like Osweiler style, trade him with a pick to get someone to take the contract.
You could. And I think it turns out to be about $18 million a year for the next two.
But aren't they still on the hook Carson for a Wentz? Bunch of it, even if they trade him?
Yeah, I think they'd be on the hook for they'd have some dead money, yes. But I think you would have a market to trade him.
You're going to have to, man. I mean, like, he's broken, and Jalen Hurts is fun. He's not perfect. I mean, it's not like I'm betting the house on Jalen Hurts, but I like him more than I like Wentz.
When you made this move, I think we talked about it way back when on that podcast after the draft.
Oh,
I know I talked about it in some of the coverage. I said, you're asking for a disaster when you take someone that high in the second round, especially with the needs that that team had. And they had a lot of needs at receiver and offensive line and to kind of support them. And you decide to take a QB there in the second round. This possibility in that market in particular, with the volatile nature and the ups and downs that Carson already had with his confidence, you're inviting that into
maybe,
this environment.
Or maybe you said Carson has the ups and downs of this confidence and we don't believe that he's ever going to get it back. We better draft a kid like Jalen Hurts early and be prepared for the inevitable decline of our quarterback.
That much money?
That much money?
They're on the hook no matter what. If they trade him, they're on the hook for $25 million next year.
Mm-hmm.
And the following year, I think it's another $20 million that they're still on the hook for again.
That's even if they trade him.
Even if they trade him.
Yeah, it's a disaster, man.
$50 million, basically.
What a complete mess for a team that won a Super Bowl just a few years ago. They're up a creek.
And I think an executive of the year, Howie Roseman.
Sure.
I think an executive of the year.
Yeah, not John Schneider. Never won that thing. Packers did something similar, right? They drafted Love this year in the late first round, completely jobbing the Seahawks, by the way, and essentially ruining the Seahawks draft plans when it all happened. But I was thinking about the Packers. They have won two Super Bowls in the last 25 years, right? They won one with Favre, one with Rodgers. They've had either Favre or Rodgers for essentially every game for 25 plus years. They've won two Super Bowls in that time. Is that successful or not? They won two Super Bowls. Each of them have won a Super Bowl.
They both lost a Super Bowl, right? The Favre went back and lost to the Broncos, and Rodgers went back and lost to the Steelers. So they've been to four in that stretch.
No, he beat the Steelers. He's only been to one.
He's only been to one?
Rodgers only been to one. He beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl. That's his only Super Bowl.
Really?
Yeah. He's only been to one Super Bowl.
Almost made another one, but Russell Wilson, Jermaine Kearse had something to say.
something going on there.
Well, he's lost in the championship game a couple times.
He has.
Giants as well.
He's lost in a bunch of championship games, but he's only been to one Super Bowl.
So three Super Bowls in 25 years, and you win two.
Yeah.
Is that a success?
I mean, for most franchises, going to three Super Bowls and winning two in the course of 25 years is really good in the NFL. But when you've had Favre and Rodgers under center for that entire time, is it good? Is it successful?
And going to the playoffs in those 25 years, probably
23 times. It's hard to imagine that.
Other
been
when
many
Rodgers
years.
Got hurt, broke his collarbone, and I mean, to give yourself a chance over and over. What do these golfers say? Back to your Tiger Woods. What do they always say, every one of them? I just want to give myself a chance, right? I just want to get to that final round, be in position to win, see if I can put myself, just in a position to find a way to win. And the Packers have done that for two decades. And the quarterbacks are a big reason why. Constantly in position to win in NFC championship games, at home, on the road. Been to Super Bowls, won two Super Bowls. Is it a success? Would 31 other organizations say that many playoff trips, that many title games, two Super Bowls? I think a multitude of organizations would say, yeah.
Yeah. Does it make you think of the Seahawks differently when you realize that it's been 25 years with those two quarterbacks and they've had two championships? Does that make you think any differently about the last 10 or 12 years here with the Seahawks?
I mean, I have incredible respect for what Russell has done. So, I mean, it's for all of those, it's let down. Yep. If Russell only wins one Super Bowl, Pete and the organization totally let him down. Really? Really? Was that the same in Indy? Was that the same in New Orleans with Drew Brees and Peyton Manning? Is that the same? Are you putting that same Aaron Rodgers who's won one Super Bowl in the last 15 years?
Favre won one. I mean, like, that seems to be the
norm. I mean,
are
you putting that same constraint? It's kind of like, as I said to you earlier, what Adam Gase said about Mahomes screwing everybody. It's what Brady and Belichick have done.
Well, that's really it. I mean, like, this is the normal comparison. Most teams do this in this era. I understand that back in the day, before the salary cap, you could do what Dallas and San Francisco did, right?
In the 80s, San Francisco, in the 90s, Dallas.
You could build that. But in the modern era with the salary cap, it really does kind of point out that what Brady and Belichick did is the exception not to be expected. To win six championships together is crazy.
Insane.
It's insane that they were able to do it.
10 Super Bowls.
It's really remarkable.
And kudos to the Bills to finally win an AFC.
Yes. Yeah, and I guess they took out a big billboard in Foxborough saying they had the best fans. Like, I don't know, man. It's your first win forever. I don't know. But, hey, good for them. I like the confidence. Speaking of Belichick and Brady, Patriots are already eliminated, right? They're out. Brady is likely to make the playoffs in Tampa. They had a rough start but came back this week. So what do you think any differently about the Belichick-Brady thing now a year later?
I think they never should have divorced.
No, I know, but in terms of the credit pie, does the Patriots failing this year and Brady succeeding, does it change at all how you feel about the two of them?
I mean, if the Buccaneers were 13-1 and Brady was doing, Brady didn't make the Pro Bowl. Kyler Murray made the Pro Bowl ahead of Tom Brady. So, I mean, Tom Brady was not a Pro Bowler there, 8-5? So they both needed each other. They should have never divorced. They should have found a way to add to the roster. Had Tom played, would every one of those defensive guys opted out this season? I don't think they would have. And I think that they would have very much been in position to continue to win and make the playoffs and be a tough obstacle in the playoffs.
I've believed for a while that Belichick was more important than Brady, but I don't know. This is a pretty damning piece of evidence there. Now,
is it to
I'm
you?
Also the idiot who thought that they should have traded Brady when they had Matt Castle and gotten a bunch of first-round picks. I'm a complete moron. So
I mean, but that team, understand, as we said earlier, right, in the first segment, talked about just the talent. I think we kind of ended on the risk-reward, but the talent, a big part of it. And when you have your most talented players at every level of your defense all opt out this year, they have, six opt-outs, more than anybody else, and then you lose Tom, and you don't – Cam Newton's shoulder is a disaster, and he can't throw effectively, and – you know, you've tried
you
to
have a quarterback. It's like the Peyton Manning thing.
You say that all the time.
Why did the Colts go 0-16? Yes, they needed Peyton Manning, but also they didn't even have a serviceable backup.
Yes.
Right? With the year that Manning got hurt, it was Kerry Collins for half a game, then he got hurt, and then they had nothing left. So it's not like they went from him to Teddy Bridgewater or some of these other guys who float around out there as serviceable backups.
I mean, if they had Andy Dalton, if they had a first-round pick, a Herbert or a Tua, or you know, if they just had somebody at position.
That's on Belichick a little bit. I mean, he could have prepared for that. He traded Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, like, some of these things happen. I know
Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, I mean, like, there were options out there for him that he's had that he's traded away. So, I don't know. It at least makes me reconsider some of that. Not that by the way, it wasn't like it was 100-0. Brady's pretty darn good for a long time. But I thought that Belichick was more important than Brady, and this at least makes me question whether or not that's true and very possibly goes the other way. So just something I was thinking about. You want one more? You want a little quick Mariners conversation?
Ooh, yeah.
They've just been nibbling a little bit here, haven't they?
Oh, yeah.
Just a little nibble.
A little Trout.
Hasn't everybody in baseball been kind of nibbling?
Yeah, everyone's sort of nibbling, but the Mariners...
No, nobody's taking the bait.
They're very specifically nibbling. They're just kind of nibbling at relievers out there, like, snag a little reliever, a little nibble at a reliever over there, right? Is this the right approach for them right now?
I don't get it.
What do you want? You want them to go nuts and splurge now?
No, I just want... If they're going to add players, I want it to be serious players. Otherwise, don't bother. Like, what's the point in spending...
I mean, is this the offseason to get Lindor?
If you're going to get Lindor, you have to trade for him now and sign him. That's the only way you get him, because he's not going to the free agent market. There's no way.
You don't think so?
Somebody will Mookie Betts him and trade for him this offseason and sign him. That's the only way you get Francisco Lindor. There's
I mean, I would love that. And I know they would love that, but I don't think they're going to do it that way. I think they'll try to get him in free agency. Or I don't think they will make an attempt to actually trade for him and do it. And by the way, you can kind of see why. I mean, have you seen the way Baseball America, et cetera, are treating the Mariners prospects? I mean, they are cream of the crop. Now, their official rankings aren't out yet, but saw Julio Rodriguez is on the cover of the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, right? Like, when they release their ratings, I'm not going to be surprised if the Mariners are a top three farm system.
They're going to have two guys in the top 15, probably.
Maybe.
Probably three or four guys in the top 50.
What's Julio Rodriguez going to be?
He's going to be in the... Kellen could be higher than him, but...
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. I'm sure about that.
Rodriguez is passing him up.
I'm pretty sure.
Putting him on the cover, et cetera, like... I don't know. We'll see. I think they love both of those guys, though. And so, and it's not just those two. I mean, Baseball America seems to really like the whole system. The Mariners building something here, man. Like, you know, I don't know what to reasonably expect in 2021. And the fact that they're nibbling still, and the fact that we've heard, right, the shortcut is patience, like those things factor into what you can reasonably expect the upcoming year to be like. But it sure has to give you hope for 22. And the fact that that's really, more, really the time.
Is there more anticipation for this crew than there was for the big three?
I think so. Because for it's
Walker,
more balanced.
And Paxton.
I think so. I think it's a little bit more of a balanced group.
And that's a big four. Please respect Brandon Maurer.
He's the only one who really made it out of the group.
Thank you, Brock.
So Tywon Walker now. But yeah, it's interesting. I think that the ceiling of the guys that they have now is so much higher than the ceiling of the guys they had then. Mm-hmm. Back then, those were safe prospects. They were maybe they'll be above average, but they're at least, as soon as they get there, average guys. The ceiling for the Mariners prospects now, the
superstars.
Young four that they have, are top of the game kind of players. And that's what we've been trying to get them forever, and they finally have it.
So I'm with you, Howdy. I would love for them to find a way to get that premier shortstop. Maybe it's Seager. Maybe it's Lindor. I don't know who the answer is to that. But I'm with you. Trevor Story is still an option. I mean, like, there's some options there. And they may be waiting to find the best way to acquire. It doesn't have to be Lindor. It can really be any of them. So we'll see. We'll see how they're able to pull that off here in the next couple of years.
This is Brock and Sox Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, Broggle, Blue 88 to finish things off. I got three or four football questions for you. Let's start this way. Seahawks dominated the Washington defensive line, right? That was probably, for me, the highlight of the game is what they did to that premier unit. Well, they're going to face another one. This coming week, going up against the Rams, reigning defensive player of the week again, Aaron Donald. What does it give you hope, the fact that they handled Washington's D-line? Can that translate to what they do this week against the Rams?
Yes. You just have to avoid the 3rd and 7+, as they largely did against the Washington football team, where you don't let those guys pin their ears back and go. And it was a beautiful plan. You know, we talked about that earlier. It was moving the pocket. It was play action. It was getting the ball out of Russell's hands. It was easy completions. It was mixing the run. And I think more than anything, and I saw this in the Jets game, and they employed it, and Adam Gase said he was going to do it, and they did it. And, Mike, that is one of your favorite things. Run the ball on 3rd down. Do not let Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd and Michael Brockers and the rest of those guys do what they did the first time around in this matchup and just, you know, get in their track stance and come downhill and hammer you. If they're going to get in their track stance, get underneath them and run the ball, even if it's 3rd and 7. Who cares? You know, much rather see them try to run the ball and give Chris Carson and crew an opportunity to run at them instead of them running downhill at you. So, yes, I think that was encouraging, and you will absolutely see many of those elements in play against the Rams Sunday.
All right, question number two. I tweeted at you during your game.
During my game?
I know, yeah, I tweeted at you during the game. I didn't think that you'd see it, but I thought maybe you'd come up with an answer later. So I'm watching your game, and it's something I see all the time, but I just happen to see it from the Jets. They get down to the 7, they get 1st and goal from the 7.
Yep.
They run the ball on 1st down, they pick up 4 yards, now it's 2nd and goal from the 3. Then they throw the ball twice. Why? What is the point of running from the 7 to the 3, which is a pretty decent run? It's like as much as you would hope to expect that of a 1st down running play would be 4 yards, right?
Yeah.
You're not trying, in all likelihood, to score with a running play from the 7 on 1st down. So what is the point of shrinking the amount of space you have to throw with and then throwing twice? Isn't the advantage of running down to the 3 running the ball 2 more times to try to get it into the end zone? Otherwise, yeah. Why not throw the ball 3 times from the 7?
I think many reasons why, Mike, you see a lot of people throw on 3rd and 1 to 3 and throw down there around the 3 yards and in is because there is very high tendencies on the defensive side of what you're going to get. You know what you're going to get. You know what they're going to play. They're going to play man-to-man. And there's a lot of people that just say, if I'm going to get man-to-man, I should be able to devise concepts either through rub routes and play action to have guys open, which you see a lot. You see a lot of touchdown passes down there with wide open guys. Or I get a one-on-one situation, and your job in any one-on-one situation is to win it. So I think it's because of the tendencies of those defenses of, you know, exactly what you're going to get in 3rd and 1 to 3 90% of the time. And once you get inside the 3, you're largely going to get man to man.
Why run the ball then on 1st down? Isn't it a waste of time?
Well, first down at the 7, you don't know what you're going to get. If you call a man beater and they play zone, then you're kind of stuck and you're scrambling around and you throw it away and you get nothing.
But so what? But maybe you get the touchdown there versus...
You may.
I mean,
you may.
I'm just telling you why you see that. It seems like the 3 or 4 yards you're picking up on first down are a waste. I don't know.
Because
now, look,
you waste a shot.
Yeah, and I saw the Rams do it a few minutes later to success. They also had first down around the 6 or 7. They ran the ball to around the 3, and then on second down they ran play action and scored. So, I'm not saying it doesn't work ever. Of course, sometimes it does, and maybe play action is part of the key also, that because now it looks like you're going to set up the run and
you're willing to run it down there.
But it does seem odd. Just watching it, like, okay, first down pass or first down run, you get closer, you make passing harder, and then you throw twice.
Again, I think it is just all about those tendencies. You know what the cards are. Okay, I know what the card is. I know what the face card. Oh, I got a face. Okay, now I see this. Okay, I got. What do I want to do? Do I want to hit this? And most people will say, if I get man-to-man coverage, and I know I'm going to get man-to-man coverage, A, I can devise scheme, or B, my personnel is good enough to win it. And if we can't, then that's on us. Then that's our responsibility. And they were better man-to-man in those situations than we were.
All right, question number 3. DJ Reed, great game on Sunday. Pete psyched about him on with Danny and Gallant, talking about how he played as well as any cornerback has for the last few years. Are you ready to commit to DJ Reed as one of your starting
Getting real
corners?
Close, man. Getting real, real close to doing it. I would agree with Pete. I can't remember, Mike. I can't remember a game where a DB played that aggressively. Now, granted, it wasn't against one of the elite wide receivers. It wasn't against a DK Metcalf or DeAndre Hopkins or Stephon Diggs or anything like that, right? I mean, you had an opportunity in a matchup that obviously DJ had great confidence in. But regardless, you have not seen Shaq Griffin play that kind of game again and again and again. And the coaching tape was even better, man, watching it. Like, he was just sitting, and he was aggressive, and he was feisty. And then his pick was a phenomenal play to come off of his route. That wasn't even his route. But he knew, like, okay, they're going to run this deep over. Everybody runs this deep over against this coverage. And if I see it, I'm going to pull the trigger. And then I'm going to go high point, and I'm going to go get it. And in a year, yes, where it was supposed to be, remember, who are they going to pay?
Yeah.
Shaq Griffin, Quentin Dunbar, both free agents, both highly incentivized.
He's outplayed both of them.
Who he has. Absolutely has. And he's going to have a couple more weeks to continue to shine and do it.
Because
I'm putting Dunbar back on the field. There's no way.
Not over this.
No, sir.
No, I'm pretty impressed. And he seems to be better on the outside than at nickel.
Yeah, he's willing to just go for it, man. And that is what Pete loves. You know, you got to walk that line. We talked about risk-reward earlier today, and it's the same thing when you play in Pete's system, because you know what? I got to stay on top. I can't give up the big play. Yet there's also times where I got to pull the trigger, man. I got to go for it. If I see this coming, I've got to go after it, because the reward could be enormous, as it was with that interception against the Washington football team.
All right, question number 3 or 4. Sorry, got my numbers off. Did you see Snacks' tweet yesterday, Brock, on Monday after the Pro Bowl voting came out?
I did not.
So, love Snacks, by the way. My kids just think and talk about Snacks all the time. As I tweeted him the other day, because in the middle of dinner, kids are just like, what do you think Snacks is having for Christmas dinner?
And he responded to you.
Oh, yeah, Snacks loves stuff like that.
I did see that.
Yeah, my kids are just like, what do you think Snacks is having? And he's having vegetables, apparently. He's all vegetarian.
Oh, yeah. Got trimmed down. He made a plant, very important.
He made a plant-based turn like me. Anyway. Snacks tweeting after the Pro Bowl came out. Since the Pro Bowl game won't be played, I think the guys who got voted in should, quote, back out for a would-be first-timer or contract year guy. Pro Bowl accolade would still be yours either way. Start looking out for each other would be dope. I kind of agree with that. All the guys who'd be like, not everybody, but everyone who's like, yeah, if it were being held this year, I still wouldn't go. Back out. Do what you would normally do and let everybody else get their Pro Bowl accolades.
20 guys back out
every year. And so what, we're going to have 20 fewer Pro Bowlers than normal this year? I like that idea. Good for Snacks.
Interesting.
And I don't think this is selfish.
He wants a little player collusion is what he's asking for.
A little
for.
Bit. And it's not like he's going to be one of the players. I mean, like, he's only played a couple of games this year. He's not going to be a Pro Bowler. But asking for others to do so for their compatriots, I kind of like it.
I'll send you some sound. It's a pretty incredible sound. I heard this the other day of Bradley Chubb, defensive end for the Broncos, who made the Pro Bowl after tearing his ACL last year, crying. Like, and trying to apologize on the Zoom, like literally crying. He's like, I'm so sorry. And he kept crying. He's like, it was a tough place after I tore my ACL last year. And to come back and get, you know, this honor and voted in the Pro Bowl. Well, as it turns out, is a first-round pick. His fifth-year option year escalates by $3 million.
Oh, yeah, but who's happy
by making
that
Pro Bowl. So I don't think Bradley's going to be willing to opt out. I think there's a bunch
of
them
in that
space.
He's already made the Pro Bowl. Why not opt out? What does he care? He's already made it. He can opt out.
Oh, you opt out. You opt out of the Pro Bowl. You opt out of that incentive. You want to opt out?
What? I don't think so.
Oh, you want to opt out?
I don't think it works that way.
Oh, you don't think so?
No. I think I'm guessing it's not playing in the Pro Bowl. It's
so you want these players to collude for the benefit of the players?
I just think they want to make. They should make it like a normal year where 20
I'm
guys.
Sorry,
don't go.
I'm totally being mean to Snacks. Go for it.
Yeah, dude. Why?
These your kids' favorite.
Of all
I'm
the
sorry.
People. I why apologize. Would you be mean to Snacks?
Delete that. Delete
seriously,
that.
You're a jerk. Barn. First, it's 10-year-old girls. Now Barn. It's Snacks. What kind of? What's wrong with you, man?
We gotta go.
We do have to run. Hope everybody has a great holiday this weekend. Enjoy the time off. We will be back next week as normal with a response to the big Rams game, which is essentially the beginning of the playoffs for the Seahawks. So looking forward to that. Brock, we'll talk next week. Until then, hey.
Barn.
See everybody. Get to the chopper!